Zia Parker grew up in Boulder and had the Willow Way Farm Permaculture Teaching Center, and now is in Ecuador. She's back visiting. So welcome back, Zia.
Thank you, Elena.
So tell us about what you were doing with Willow Way and permaculture, and then why you moved to Ecuador.
Well, I had been involved in permaculture since I first trained as a permaculture teacher in 90, and I had taught in several countries, in Mexico, Canada, in Fiji, in Greece a little bit, and I finally had enough money to buy a little piece of dirt in Boulder County. It was agriculturally zoned, and I wanted to teach the permaculture design course there, and the county codes just ate me up. And, you know, it became very, very difficult. And basically, I ended up kind of walking away. And the whole thing was quite a hassle, but it ended up being a good thing because it catapulted me and my husband to Ecuador. And I have just found that Ecuador has offered so many more opportunities to express my passion, which is how do we create more interest in regenerative lifestyles and the organic movement, and hello people, we are in the sixth great extinction. I kind of want to go around, you know, knocking on doors saying, hello, do you know we are in the sixth great extinction, and are you involved? Are you doing anything about it?
And it's human caused. It's not a natural extinction.
And we're not exempt. Homo sapiens are not exempt, you know. And so anyway, for all of this passion that I have for ecological causes, I've been able to do so much more in Ecuador.
So tell us, what are you doing in Ecuador? How are you growing things? And who do you work with? Where do you sell it? And give the people a flavor of that.
Well, we've been there 7 years now, and so things have, you know, developed somewhat gradually, but we did buy just 1 acre that was raw land and started to develop a small 1 acre permaculture model. And so on the way, we got quite involved in the work there to defend the Ecuadorian ban on GMOs. That is constitutional law there. It's part of the constitution, but that doesn't mean it's not threatened. And while we've been there the 7 years, there have been 3 major threats to it. And each time my husband and I and friends, increasingly more and more Ecuadorian friends, have gotten really involved with very creative actions. And I think that just seeing the response of people across the country when one of those threats arises, it's just incredible. It's very inspiring to me. And so now we've established an organic market. We've worked together with Ecuadorian friends, and we have a organic market that has been operational for 4 years now, and we are vendor producers in it. Everyone can sell only what they grow, which is a really great way to establish a peer review guarantee system. So that has actually evolved now into 5 different projects that are all related. They're all local initiatives, but they all address global issues. And so they are seed protection. Seed protection is really the basis of it. That is, if anything shows up as a threat to the GMO ban or to sovereignty of seed, individuals' ability to grow, sell, barter seed, we're on it. We drop everything, and that's the key thing. And there's many different ways that we're involved in that protection. There's a wonderful national organization. It's Red Guardianes de las Semillas, which is a national seed guardian organization. And I am the representative for the 2 southern provinces. So we have national meetings. They're incredibly savvy, intelligent people that are involved in this organization. Our WhatsApp group gets a posting about every 5 minutes with people coming up with questions. What, you know, what is this species? Does anybody know this? New species are being found all the time. So that's very exciting to be part of a national movement. And across the country, this organization organizes neighborhood seed exchanges. So that's what we do in our region. We have them every equinox, every fall and spring. Those are the ideal planting times there. It's year-round growing in that climate. But we also are quite involved in political action and some really fun, creative things have occurred because out of our political action. And then the latest is that we have developed a women's herbal and seed collective. So that will give us a way to get some money coming back into our efforts and for income streams to trickle down, if you will, to lots of people. And it also means that we'll be able to preserve some of the incredible depth that there is there around the medicinal herbs and the seeds for those herbs, and of course, all the varieties of food seeds. So Ecuador is one of the most biodiverse countries in the world. And where we are in Vilcabamba, in the province of Loja, because it's a low point in the Andes, we can grow things from the three major climate zones, which are the coastal region and the Sierra, and then Amazonia. We can grow things from those three regions. So we can grow the subtropical fruits like the oranges and papayas and bananas, but we can also grow the fully tropical things like cacao and pineapple and mangoes. And we can grow stone fruit and like apples and cherries and peaches. So the biodiversity is off the scale. It means it's a very ideal climate for propagating seed and having a seed company. So that's what we're working on initiating now. It's part of the Yupaychani network, which includes Seed Saving, the Women's Herbal Collective, a small land collective, reforestation, and mapping organic corridors. We'd like to get a site online where people can go to a website and see, is this property positioned well in terms of what their neighbors are growing? Or if they buy this land, are they going to be poisoned by their neighbors?
Well, having been an activist, an environmental activist, and for organic gardening and sustainable agriculture here in the States, and then going to Ecuador, what would you say are some of the lessons that people here could learn from the Ecuadorians and their models for sustainability, for development, for maintaining harmony, and for organizing?
Well, I think the biggie, Elena, is just to begin, you know, that whatever your passion is, there's so many ways to serve and to just get out there and start. You know, we can see that deforestation is a real problem in our valley. It's a beautiful valley. It's quite well known. It's famous for longevity. But you can just look out across the ridges and see that the ridge tops have some remnants of trees, and that it used to have a ring of forests around it, and that's not the case now. And so we're beginning in a very strategic way with one watershed that's very, it's the most visible watershed. And so we're just starting, you know, once we get a bit of a track record, we're confident that we'll be able to attract more funding from the local government and the different levels of government. And there's a lot of big non-governmental organizations that are active in Ecuador. And same thing with just the activism around GMOs, starting our organic market. You know, we started to take one step at a time, and then you can see what the next step is. There's so much good work that's going on here in Boulder and in the United States with all the threats that are currently being faced. I know it's really daunting, but I feel like, you know, there's two main theories about the problem. You know, the people that look at the problem is the matrix, the cabal, the transnationals, the banks, also known as the radically out of control, fear-driven psychopaths that hold the 99% in serfdom. And then the other theory is the 99% give way to complacence and apathy, and they're addicted to the comfort zone, which results in very easy to control sheeple. And the truth is that it's both. And yes, there is a control matrix. And yes, we can't give away our power. And I think we need to look at actions that we can get into, that we can enjoy, that can be fun.
In Ecuador, Ecuador is known for banning GMOs and also for promoting rights of nature. And here in Boulder County, and as in many other places, it's been a real struggle against GMOs. It's really difficult because there's such economic pressure behind them. What would you say are some lessons that maybe we could learn as far as dealing with GMOs? And as a second question, is the support for rights of nature real on the ground, or is it more just kind of on a piece of paper in Ecuador?
Oh, those are good questions, and they're big questions. As far as rights of nature, I have friends that supported a case that nature did win. Nature can win a court case in Ecuador, and it had to do with mining gravel in a river and the riverbank being destroyed and it affecting people downstream, affecting private property downstream. It was a struggle. I'm sorry, I don't know other successful cases that, you know, that have won. I know that around the world, it's just such an important step that it is, at least on paper, and that people can point to that. And then as far as GMOs, we did a wonderful action that was building mandalas with seeds. That was a response to one of the threats to seed sovereignty. There was a law before the legislature in Ecuador that would have made it illegal to have seeds that are not certified, that you could not grow seeds, barter seeds, sell seeds that were not certified. The language of that to anyone that's dealt with Monsanto and Dow and the boys, immediately you go, oh, we know what certified seeds would mean. So there were four women. I was with three girlfriends at Andrea Espinosa's house, and we heard about this law, and we just threw our arms up in the air and went, oh my God, not this again. We are so sick of this. It just keeps popping up and again and again. They said, we've got to do something. Let's do something fun. We've got to make it fun, or we're just going to expire. And so we decided we would organize seed chacanas. A chacana is the Andean cross. It is a type of mandala. So we looked around, and there was a run, a wonderful run by indigenous people that were joining in Panama. Runners were coming all the way from Alaska and also from Tierra del Fuego, and they were meeting in Panama, and they were taking 3 days in Vilcabamba for a rest.
This was the Peace and Dignity Journeys.
Yeah, and it was done every 4 years. It's been done four times now. And
actually, it's been done since 1992, but maybe not through Vilcabamba.
Oh, okay, good. So we really gave them a warm welcome. I got to be part of this cantering brigade of horses, three horses in two rows, six horses cantering to the city gate to welcome these runners. And then we marched together up to the main plaza where there's a beautiful dance we did. It was a dance of the condor and the eagle with amazing costumes. And then we had our first Seed Chicana event, which we filmed so that we could use that little video, a 1.5-minute video, to promote doing this in as many places as we could muster interest. It ended up being 8 countries where there was at least a chicana or two made out of seeds. And in Ecuador, there were 8 chicanas. And so I guess that's a message, just to make it fun, make it artful. Art and music are always good additions to activism. And then another example that I love to share about, and this was fairly recent, the current president, Lenin Moreno, was not showing his hand in terms of his stance on GMOs. And those of us in the movement were quite concerned. And as typical in his campaign, he tried to ride the middle line with so many issues. And so there were 6 national organizations, 2 national organic growers associations, and a food sovereignty association, and a responsible consumer association, and responsible lawyer association. All of 6 organizations organized, coordinated to deliver lawsuits to the Office of the Constitution of the Presidency in one day. That kind of coordination, unity, coming together, willingness to compromise, willingness to not be involved in ego or anyone having to be the hero. I was just so impressed with that. So, of course, the current president said, my position is that I support the Constitution of Ecuador, which bans GMOs. So that was something that could go out on the press across the country.
And tell us a little bit about the nuts and bolts of how, for example, the women's cooperative works. What are they producing? Where are they selling it? Who's involved in that?
Yeah, it's the Yupaichani Women's Herbal and Seed Cooperative, and it is a cooperative. And, you know, we've tried to have like some elements of capitalism and some elements of socialism to try to find a third way, because obviously both of those are not really bringing us into balance with Pachamama. So we started out with four women, and each of us took two combinations. We formulated those combinations ourselves, and then we put them up for discussion so that we got feedback from everybody. We have one really masterful local herbalist, Enma Cordero, and she comes from a lineage. Her mother and her grandmother were really relied upon in their region, as is Enma more and more these days. And she's a walking encyclopedia, so she's our ultimate authority. So each of the people in our guiding council is what we call it. We don't have like president, secretary, those traditional kinds of roles, but we all have equal power. But we make decisions together and guide the council and guide the making of these combinations then is up to each woman. And so she will harvest what she can from her garden or her farm. And then we will buy from all of the people in the organic market. We are all members of the organic market. So we've been working together for 4 years, and we have that history and we have that sharing our values. And the buying spreads out to all the members of the market that are interested. And I think that's a nice example of having a balance between it's somewhat the structure of a collective, but it has some capitalistic qualities. And we were very lucky that a buyer showed up very early when we were just starting to form and identify ourselves and get our formulas together. And a man came to rent our cabana at our little farm, Finca Vida Verde, and started talking about his medical marijuana business, online business, that's now legal in Canada, and that he wanted to extend it into a broader range of medicinal plants, and that would kind of help protect him in a somewhat sketchy legal environment. And I just, you know, my eyes popped and I said, we need to talk. And so he ended up going home to Canada with his suitcase full of our combinations. And that put some money into our account and gave us a lot of confidence. And so now we're needing to get the legal status for our products so that they can be sold on the shelf in Ecuador and that we can export them. We would like to be a real business and export them to the U.S. and Canada.
So kind of for the people that remember Willow Way and the herbal preparations, once you jump through those somewhat bureaucratic hurdles, similar to kind of like the FDA, then that might be able to happen?
Yes. And there are, in my trip here, I've been here for about a month now. And thanks so much to Brigitte Mars. We're friends from many years back. Went to the massage school together back 40 years ago. And she gave me a spot on her table at the Botanica Festival, wonderful gathering of very savvy herbalists from the region. And there are a number of small apothecaries here that are interested in carrying herbs. So that's what it takes, kind of a knitting together of interests on both sides. And so we're taking steps in the right direction.
Well, and let people know how they can learn more about Yupaichani and Vida Verde, and where can people go for more information?
Well, right now we do have a crowdfunding platform on Patreon, and it's to benefit the five linked projects. And that can be found at patreon.com. It's just patreon.com. It does ask for a monthly donation, and that, of course, helps us in the long run to keep going. And the benefit to the donor is that you get to form relationship with us and receive our newsletter and get to be a part of our progress, our growth. So if you go to patreon.com/Yupaichani Network, Yupaichani means, in Quechua, thank you, Pachamama. And you spell it just capital Y-U, P-A-I-C-H-A-N-I. UPINI Network, UPINI Network. The Y and the N are capitalized. And there you can see a little video that describes our network.
And do you have any other recommendations for people if they're interested in learning about the Ecuador's struggle against GMOs or for the rights of nature or anything like that?
They can always go to our website, vidaverde.info, and there's some information on our website. And actually, I don't know where that's written about very much.
And I guess finally, Zia, with your years of working with permaculture and looking at the environmental problems that permaculture works to heal, what kind of things give you hope?
The young people give me hope. And volunteers that come from all over the world that come to volunteer at our little farm, there's so many that are really equipping themselves with information and experience, and they inspire me. And then, of course, Chio Descat and the Earth Guardians here in Boulder are always just mind-blowingly inspiring. And then I think that more and more, you know, crisis does equal opportunity. We've seen that so many times in the past. And I think more and more people are signing up to create their lifestyle in a way that they can actually really dig into something that is satisfying for them and that makes sense in terms of who they are, what they love, and what they have prepared themselves to do, to really start to be part of the solution.
Well, Zia Parker, thank you so much.
Thank you, Elena. What a pleasure.
And for KGNU, this is Elena.